Murder.
All right, hey. Oh. Sorry. Everybody, welcome back to This, That, and the Other Thing. I am, as always, Danielle, with my Loving the Fire Pit Season co-host, Stephanie.
Hello.
So this episode, we are back with some more true crime. But before we get into all the crime and mystery, something that's no mystery at all is how we started this podcast. And that's all thanks to Buzzsprout.
That's right. Buzzsprout gets your show listed in every major podcast platform, set you up with a podcast website, audio players you can drop into other sites, analytics to see how people are listening, and so much more.
Following the link in our show notes, lets Buzzsprout know we sent you, gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan, and helps support our show. So if you're ready to get behind the mic and hit record, let Buzzsprout help you on your way. All right, so let's start out with a high-profile case that was covered on Netflix just recently, American Murder, Family Next Door. The documentary is about Shannon Watts and her young daughters, Bella and Celeste, who went missing in August 2018.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this documentary was that all of the footage used was from the police cams, the interrogation, all of her social media, home videos, text messages. The family had given the company that produced it, you know, permission to use it. So there was really no footage filmed other than what was already recorded. So it was an interesting take on a documentary because now with everything being out there all the time with cameras and videos and cell phones, it was an interesting way for them to put it all together, I thought.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I really liked how the footage gave us all the story and the way that it went about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, and Shannon shared a lot of their personal story online.
Like on Facebook and stuff, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, I was trying to kind of like watch the documentary and then like also look at her Facebook and stuff and like see all of the things that they're kind of showing in mm-hmm. the documentary. So yeah, so basically, you know, she'd been previously married, followed by a terrible divorce, of course, and this led to a total loss of self-control. And she was then soon diagnosed with lupus, which I'm sure was a hard hit on her, and that wasn't easy. She met Chris Watts on Facebook, and I'm, you know, kind of going with she was very present on Facebook, and that's probably how it happened. And she eventually started dating and they got married. She definitely said she couldn't have met a better man. And that was definitely prominent throughout the whole like documentary, I noticed. Like it was definitely all like she loved him very much. They eventually bought a home in Colorado and started a family. They had two beautiful daughters, Bella and Celeste, and they were definitely their world, or at least it seemed like it.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon documented a lot of their lives on Facebook, and you can still see that today. She definitely had a lot of love for their family.
Yeah, I mean, looking from the outside, they seemed like a perfect family, that there weren't any issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that summer of 2018, Shannon and the girls, they went away to visit family in North Carolina for 6 weeks, and Chris was going to join them for the last week. And during this time, it was revealed that they seemed to have had some issues in the marriage. So what looked like from the outside wasn't really what was going on. She felt it was one-sided, that he wasn't trying. You'll see like a bunch of text messages that have been going on between them. You know, she was upset, you know, he hadn't called or FaceTimed to see the girls or her that often. He just seemed to be unavailable. You know, she hoped that when he arrived for the last week, things would have been different, but not much had changed.
Right, right. And so then I guess a few days after that, after returning and everything, she and the girls went missing, mm-hmm. which to me seems kind of like too perfectly timed almost.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
yeah.
my feelings. So she and her friend Nicole had went to work at a conference together for a couple of days, and Nicole dropped her off back at her house at like 2 a.m. on the August 13th. And then when Nicole tried to text her the next day, she wasn't responding. She wasn't picking up any phone calls. And, you know, Nicole was getting worried. So she went to the home and called the police from there because she wouldn't answer the door. And, you know, you see that in the documentary. She's very, very concerned, not her Shannon's not, you know, her usual self at that point. The police, though, was what you know, that's the footage you see. So you see them saying, like, we can't enter the house without signs of a struggle or any permission from the owners, etc. Mm-hmm. So they had to wait for Chris to come home. And I'm guessing, I didn't quite follow it on the documentary, but I'm pretty sure it was like Nicole called Chris.
Yeah.
Somebody contacted Chris because he came home pretty quickly, it seemed.
Right. Yeah. And I think they were waiting because if he was at work, what we think he was, I think they said it's about an hour ride. So that makes sense. You know, if they were like waiting for him to get there, you see her calling Shannon's mom, like, what's the code to get into the garage?
Yeah. And I think the timestamp on the documentary showed him getting there around 12 o'clock or something.
Okay.
Around that time. Or maybe 1 o'clock. So, you know, now they're in the house and everything and they're searching the home and they couldn't find any evidence of a disturbance, and Shannon's phone and wedding ring were still in the house, which was kind of, you know, a weird, like, well, what do we make of this kind of situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially knowing like how present she was with her phone and social media and just with her friends in general, for her not to have her phone with her.
Yeah, really
was
odd.
Right. And it was off too,
yeah,
which is another weird thing. Which also, I don't know if you caught that too, is like you see the text messages that were coming through from her friends and from Chris, and you know, they're like, where are you? What's going on? So that was interesting too. But the footage that they show like during that time too, when they're like trying to first locate her, is disturbing, especially if you know how the story ends. But some of the police cam footage showed a neighbor who came over to play the video of the street, because he had that from the security system in his house. And yeah, you can kind of see, you know, Chris was talking, he's kind of rambling a little bit, and the neighbor said to the officer that he thought Chris wasn't really acting right. Which case, you know, the point that the officer made too is like, well, you got to think, you know, what kind of pressure he's under right now. You know, his family is missing, which I totally get.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I've never, and hopefully never will have to be in that situation, but I felt like it was like more on the odd side as opposed to the worried side.
Right. Like to me, I mean, like knowing myself, I'd probably be a little more frantic, which isn't necessarily my usual, but it's still like, it comes off as concerned, almost frantic to me. So I don't know. He didn't seem concerned in general.
Yeah. You know, like if I could like portray what he looked like to me, he looked like, you know, like his hands in his pockets and he's like kicking the dirt, you know, like on the ground, like, oh, you know, it just seemed weird. And also, you know, he kind of dropped a bomb with the cops saying, you know, oh yeah, and she's also, you know, 5 months pregnant, you know, so she was pregnant with another child. So now you have technically four missing persons, because you have the wife pregnant with the son and their two daughters who are only 4 and 3 years old.
Yeah. And he said it almost as like an afterthought.
Right. Right.
So it was kind of weird that it was like something triggered and he's like, oh yeah, and she's pregnant. It seemed like fake to me. Like she really wasn't the way he said it.
Yeah, it's true. It definitely came over as a very interesting way to say it, which again, you can go back to thinking like, well, he could have been like just overwhelmed at that point. You know, he didn't really think about it, but being it would have been his first son, I don't know. It just seems like that would have been something that might have come up.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was weird. I'll say that much. So yeah, I think it was either like the next day or a couple of days later, they had Chris come in for a follow-up interrogation. They asked him if he had any idea where Shannon and the girls could be. And of course, he denied that. He had no idea. He also was asked about having an affair, which he denied, of course. And the detectives had him take a polygraph and the results were, you know, failed. I don't know. Polygraph to me, I'm sure this is, I guess, widely agreed upon, is that polygraph isn't totally like reliable, but I don't know. If you fail it, you fail it. That's to me, like, that's it.
Yeah. When it's like that bad. You know, I think too, in this case was like, especially with the neighbor had the footage and the way everything was kind of pointing.
Yeah.
They kind of already, they knew he was somehow involved. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, okay, well, he failed this. So what are we going to get out of him? you know,
yeah. Like they, and like the whole, like, they're asking him if he's had an affair, and they're saying mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, we've noticed like you've been working out a lot lately. Usually exactly. that's because you're having an affair and all that. Like, seems, you know, kind of like very obvious almost when you're actually watching it.
Right. Yeah. I think he lost like 80 pounds or something crazy. Yeah, something,
which I think what she was a rep for, whatever.
Thrive.
Thrive. Right. Which to me, it seems like he had been doing that for mm-hmm. a while, which, you know, maybe it was because of the affair he started it, or it was just because she was into it
yeah.
that he started that. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, it kind of coincides like that. You see that a lot, like someone, they get fit and they have like a whole new outlook on life and they mm-hmm. feel differently about their body. Maybe they hadn't felt that way in a long time, or they've never felt that way. And maybe he just was thinking he could have a different lifestyle. I'm not sure, but yeah, he failed the test and they told him like, yeah. Now's your time. After a while of denial, they brought his father in with him, where he eventually broke down and confessed to killing Shannon. He said he told Shannon he was leaving her and that she snapped and murdered the girls because he became enraged and strangled her. He also admitted to having a 2-month affair, which the authorities already knew because the mistress had come forward to the police after hearing all of this.
Yep.
And she didn't know that he was still married, especially that he had another child on the way. So, you know, here's this other girl being completely lied to. You know, she knew that he had been married or that they were separated. That's what he had told her.
Yeah.
But she didn't know all of this. So it's like, well, if he could lie to me about these right. things, she was a little concerned about that.
Yeah, definitely. And she, like, I don't know, it's almost like, I don't know, weird to me that she came forward like so quickly almost, but like, I feel like I'd wait for them to come to me, but I guess, you know, get ahead of letting them know you don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, that's true too, because, you know, they were interrogating her a little bit because they yeah. asked if she had any input on saying like, well, you know, did you tell him that it would be a problem that if he had kids or, you know,
right?
Because she wanted to start her own life and have kids. Like somewhere in the doc, it said something about her wanting to give him his first son. So, you know, like,
oh, I missed that. Wow.
Yeah. So it was kind of like, did that trigger something to him? Because now he was going to have his first son with Shannon and the kids.
And he didn't want that.
Right. So it's like he was, something consumed him, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he admitted it, that, you know, saying that Shannon was the one that snapped and murdered the girls, and yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird thing, but yeah, so he admitted it, and he told them that he had buried Shannon, you know, I guess in a shallow grave outside, or on site at an oil field that I guess he was working on or had worked on,
mm-hmm.
And then this is very weird to me, but he put the two girls inside of the oil drums. Like, what was the thought process there, I wonder? Like, that just seemed really odd to not bury them as well, since he, I think, buried her first.
It bothers me. Well, the whole thing bothers me. But the oil drum thing makes me think that they weren't completely dead.
Oh.
And that he threw them in there to make sure that that was that.
Oh, that's a terrible thought.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll get more to that. Well, you continue here, and because there is a little bit more to that, my reasoning behind here.
So like I said, the girls were put in the oil drums, and so then after he was taken into custody, he admitted that Shannon didn't murder the girls, and then, you know, and then he murdered her because of that. He said that he murdered her and the girls, all suffocation, strangulation, all that, and then he pleaded guilty, and as part of the plea deal, the death penalty was removed from sentencing, which, okay, good, great. Cool. I mean, I don't know, I don't want anybody to die, but you just killed 3 people, 4 people,
right? Yeah, I know. And now he gets to live, you know, right? And yeah,
he gets five consecutive life sentences without parole, which, fine. I'd honestly, my my feeling for everybody and anybody is I'd rather you live with it. Even if you aren't necessarily guilty, you're just living there and dealing with it.
Yeah.
That's what I prefer, honestly.
Well, that's true. And that's one of the things he said. So I get back to the oil drum thing. There's a woman called Sherilyn Cadle. She wrote letters and met with Chris since he's been in prison. And she ended up writing a book in which he admitted that he actually did plan ahead to murder his family. Like, he knew when he tucked the girls in the night before. Like, he said to himself, this is the last night I'm going to say goodnight to my kids and put my kids to bed. And he had spent the day with them the next day, like normal, you know, took them out and did things like just like he normally would. But I guess he had gone in and suffocated the girls in their beds. And then when Shannon, he went into her room and did that to her, the girls woke up. They came back. Like he said they had bruises around their eyes. They were asking what was wrong with mommy. And so he took them all in the car and brought them to the field and buried Shannon. And then he took the girls and he said he suffocated them again. And he said he murdered the younger one first. And then the older one, but she's 4 years old.
Yeah.
He went to put the blanket over her and said, Daddy, no. And he said that is what plays in his head over and over and over again. And he has to live with that.
That was in the documentary.
Right.
That he had mentioned.
And that. Yeah. And so again, I mean, if he wasn't so, you know, he was unsuccessful the first time with the girls. That's why I feel like with the oil drum, he was just like ensuring that there was no coming back. And I don't know how a person like that can do that. He also said in the letters, which are in the book, that he had given Shannon oxycodone twice trying to have her miscarry their child because he thought he wouldn't be able to leave her, you know, if she was still pregnant. Like, it would be a lot harder for him to leave her.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So, and there's a whole lot more detail in the book. It's called Letters from Christopher, The Tragic Confessions of the Watts Family Murders. It's such a tragic, tragic story.
I remember the dad saying something, like her dad in the documentary saying that, like, he doesn't think that Chris had done it, like, either on his own, not necessarily with another person, but, like maybe he had, like, drugs to help, like,
right.
You know, not let her wake up or something the night before or whatever, because there were no signs of struggle on his body.
I agree.
Like, he knows his daughter, like, wouldn't just not put up a fight like that, which I definitely agree with that, yeah.
I agree with that. If you see in the videos, like, of her with the girls and just the amount of videos that she has of the girls, like, every week, I mean, they're walking through an airport and she's got videos, like, when I'm at the airport with my kids, I'm like, let's book it. We're just trying to get going, you know? So, I mean, she is all about her children. And if she knew that she or her baby or her other two children were in danger, like, I agree. I feel like she would have put up a fight. She wouldn't have just said, okay, this is how my story ends. She's come this far. So I agree with that. And I don't know if the autopsy found anything, you know, it might have been too late. I don't know how that works, like, with it in their system, you know, if there was any type of, you know, he said he had given her the oxycodone before, but I don't know.
Right.
At what point. But yeah, it's just a really tragic story.
Definitely. So before you watched the documentary and everything, did you know about the story before?
I did. I did hear about the story. And I actually, you know, we don't really watch the news here. I think it might have been like Jeopardy was on or something. You know how, like, right after the show, they always show like the news briefings and it goes right into the news, you know, 10 o'clock news, 11 o'clock, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was like Jeopardy, like right before Jeopardy or it was just right around that time because it wasn't super late at night. But I remember seeing Chris Watts on the news and interview, which actually is in the documentary. And you just feel like something was off. And I was like, right away, I was like, well, he did it. I remember saying that clear as day. I was like, well, he did it. Like, it was just like, there was no question. And then, you know, just a couple days later, they said that, you know, it came out. Yeah, he did it. And it was like no surprise. What was a surprise is how he did it.
Yeah.
And the fact that I don't know how you take a life, period. But to take a life and to super, super innocent, you know, not that his wife was guilty of anything, but being, you know, herself. But these two children that literally have zero sin. There's nothing. Yeah, it's just awful.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
Yeah. And you had heard about it before?
Yeah, I did. I remember being at work, actually. And, you know, periodically throughout the day, we'd always have, like, if somebody hears something, you know, news related or something big, like big deal like that, they'll just kind of like, hey, everybody, did you hear this? And like, that was one of the things. And it was actually when he was convicted and like after he had confessed to everything is when I heard the whole story. Mm-hmm. So like, I already knew like the whole, how, you know, husband kills wife and two children and unborn child. So after I looked it up, that's when I was like, oh, okay, yeah. The like look on his face almost was just like, you clearly are guilty.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was horrible. You hear about like, I don't know, some pretty horrific murders and stuff, but like to murder your own like tiny children that haven't done anything in this world at all, really, like other than like probably be adorable and cute and everybody love them, like that's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was the hardest part for me, you know, knowing the outcome, you know, that these poor little souls were just taken. It was just really hard to watch. And there just really was no reasoning behind it. And they just seemed like the perfect family on the outside, even the, you know, the videos that she had of them at home, you know, he's playing with the kids and and her daughter singing the song, like about him being her hero.
Yeah.
Like that was like, oh my God.
How could you, you know? Get rid of that? Like toss it aside, like not like whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, I definitely want to read the book, but like he hasn't said like why, right? Like there's been no.
He just wanted a new life. He just really.
But like, just leave her then. Like, you don't have to murder.
Yeah. It's like he became like a completely different person. He lost the weight and he gained like an evil mind. I don't really know. You know, and then something said too is that also made it a little bit fishy was about the oxycodone in the book, mm-hmm. or in one of the letters in the book. He said something to the author that, you know, he'll take it to his grave where he got the oxycodone from, which makes me think it was the mistress because he's trying to protect her. Where else, you know, it's obviously someone he's trying to protect, right?
Yeah. For her not to know anything, like, I see where she would know about the family, know that he, like, had told her they're getting separated or whatever. But in today's world where you're, like, social media is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I know, it, like, you're maybe, like, putting on a show for the, like, videos and stuff that were posted. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't buy that she didn't know that they were still actually together.
Yeah, they said they also found, like, they searched her computer and there was a lot of, like, Facebook searches. Like, I forget how many hours of, like, looking up Shannon and all this stuff. So that's another red flag. But I don't know. Yeah. Apparently right now she's in the Witness Protection Program. She's changed her name and... Huh. Yeah, because I mean,
I don't know what she looks like though.
This exactly what we're doing right now too is like forming your own opinion, which you know right now everybody's got their opinion about everything all the time.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I mean, if the you know investigation found that she really did not have a part in it, I'm sure they wouldn't put her through the program like that. But you never know.
Yeah. So you know that was like one of the more horrific crimes, and you feel really bad for all the families. And at the very least, we're glad to have some closure as they were able to finally learn the real story of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike all of the cases covered in the, I'll call it the hit series this year of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah. Yeah, it was revived from the series that became a household name back in 1987. And the update, you know, actually it was... produced by Sean Levy, who is from Stranger Things. So,
no kidding.
Yep. But this series features six new cases each with their own crazy stories. I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought each one was like crazy, right? Like
definitely.
They all had some.
There were some definitely more memorable than others, but yeah. For sure they were all very strange.
Right. I agree. Well, let's start with the first one, the mystery on the rooftop with Ray Rivera.
Yeah. That one, I think, sticks out in my mind the most out of all of them. So that one was what they don't know. Like, he was found in kind of like an abandoned part of a hotel that, right. Like,
it was a former hotel.
Nobody went. Yeah.
Now it was like condos. Yeah.
And like, he fell through the roof, but they can't figure out how he got to the point that he got in the roof. And
the hole was so small.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It was definitely small. Like, would his shoulders even fit through it? I don't know.
Right. And they said his glasses and his cell phone were not broken at all.
Like, no, they were like just placed next to the hole.
Right.
It's so weird.
Super weird. I totally think the best friend had something to do with it. The friend mm-hmm, that he like ended up going to work for. Yeah, it was the same thing. He kind of just disappeared one day. His wife was on a business trip and gets this phone call. Like, she comes home, he's missing. They can't find him. I forget how much time went by. It was days. They found his car that pointed them there to the condominium. And just where the hole was and where he would have had to jump from, it just didn't add up.
Yeah, like they were thinking, like, was it from like the lower roof of the hotel, the higher roof, the ledge, like everything, like they were trying to do the trajectory
angles.
Pattern and like, right. I don't know, it seemed like he was definitely pushed off of whatever it was.
Right.
But I don't know, because like he couldn't have been on the roof where the hole was for him to go through like that.
Mm-mm. No,
it just there wouldn't be enough force to do that, and it would be like cut open instead of just like caved in.
Yeah, and the family really is really really strongly believe that it was not suicide.
No way.
They
seemed too happy, and they were just married,
right? And they had plans. Like, it just seemed he had some strange phone call. His wife had a friend staying at the home, and she just remembered hearing him have some sort of strange phone call, and he left the house in a hurry. And that was the last thing that they had heard of him. But they traced it back to his company, the phone call.
Right.
But because the company was so large and
they don't know where exactly.
Right. And his best friend like ordered something, you know, like
Porter Stansberry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just sounds evil.
His name is Porter. It's just like, yeah, okay. They ordered what do they call it? Like a hush hush thing. I forget what they call that. Where they like nobody working in the building can talk to police, which I don't understand how that's like a thing, you know?
Yeah,
like, how is that a thing?
What is that called? shoot.
I call it a hush-hush thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like you can't, I just don't understand if the police have questions, like why they can't go in there. But because there's like so many lines and phone lines in there that they couldn't trace where it came from. But just the fact that it points back to his job, it just seemed a little weird. They thought maybe he uncovered something that he shouldn't have and someone took him out. But the question is how? Like,
it's very confusing to me.
Yeah.
And like, gut feeling is definitely he got pushed. He went through there. They like looked through the hole and make sure he was like dead or like, you know, seemingly dead on the ground below, and then just like tossed his shit next to the hole. Like, here's your stuff, whatever.
Yeah, I think something like that. Like, maybe they like really beat him, like beat him and then threw him in there or something.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I mean, yeah, because even if they threw him, the trajectory just doesn't head up.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
And you feel so bad for his wife and his brother, you know, I mean, his whole family, but like the way that they spoke on the documentary, trying, you know, to just get some sort of answers or closure. I guess, again, with the unsolved mysteries, that's been a thing that once they make these stories known, that they do get more tips and things. And they said that this one was getting a lot more tips than all the other ones. So who knows? Hopefully a happy ending for any or all of these.
Yeah, I hope so.
Let's talk about 13 Minutes. I know you said this one was one of the ones that stuck with you with Patrice, the hairdresser.
Yeah, so this one was the one that was the hairdresser. And she just like was in her salon that she had clearly worked so hard to get for herself. And she got the phone call, and nobody knows who the phone call was from. I think that's what the whole story was. And she just like, what was it? She got a phone call. There was a car outside, and then just like disappeared.
Yeah. 13 minutes.
Nobody knows anything like within that time period. Yeah. It was so crazy. And like, you see the way that like they were trying to explain how so the car drove up to her salon, like kind of very close to right outside the door.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said they drove by and saw her standing outside by the car with somebody else, but they didn't know exactly who. I think they tried to describe them, but not really getting anywhere with that. And I guess pretty shortly after that, 13 minutes, she just disappeared. Like, no signs of struggle. There was just nothing. It was like, I think the door was open to her salon even.
Yeah, it was weird too. So, you know, they were talking about like her husband and her son, right? Her son was the one that was kind of talking.
Yes.
And he did not have a good relationship with her husband.
No.
So that whole thing was very fishy to me. Also, the fact that he like has her skull. Yeah, he like has her bones.
Yeah, it's weird. And it was like he won't give them back to the family, right?
Yeah.
The new husband.
He wouldn't give the son like any of his stuff either. He was like, I don't know. It was just very.
Yeah, it was very, very fishy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I definitely think it was him.
Yeah, they found her skull near like a church. So
right, yeah, no, it was definitely fishy. Like just the way that she would like run out of her plate, like out of her salon. Like clearly it was someone or someone she knew, probably something very concerning. Where she would just drop everything, and I don't know. I don't know the backstory for anything, but I wish I knew more about it. Yeah.
Well, we can investigate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it was 20 months after her disappearance that her remains were discovered 6 miles from the salon. And I remember in the episode, it was like at the very end, they were like, oh, and, you know, it was at this church, by the way, like very close to the salon. And it seems like somebody had gone there and like kind of tried to cover their tracks up a little bit. Super weird.
Yeah. Not as weird as like sleeping with your wife's ashes and stuff.
It's yeah. Really- yeah. That was super creepy. He was definitely creepy. And it was like, he almost felt like he had the right to just own her and her property.
Yeah.
Even though she's not there anymore. And just like, what gives you the right to keep all of this from her actual family?
Yeah. And he had like a background in criminology. So
he did.
Yeah. So that also makes it a little questionable,
right? Like he like knew what to look for, right? Yeah.
They said they ruled him out, but again, if he knew what to do or what to say or what, you know, one that stuck with me too was the House of Terror, and that one took place in France, where they allegedly a French aristocrat, he reportedly murdered his wife and 4 children, and then disappeared after he looked right into like one of the CCTV cameras. They think
so weird.
That maybe he fled to another continent. Some think that like his whole family is still alive, but I don't know how that's possible. But very, very strange story. You know, they were like all in their house and then the windows were closed. And that was like a huge red flag because they always had their windows open.
Right. All the neighbors were saying that, right?
Yeah. And then there was like a note on the door. The police had gone in, they didn't see anything, everything looked clean and fine. And I forget how many times it took them to go back to the house, but they found them.
I think it was like 3
yeah.
times?
Oh no, I'm sorry, 6 times.
Six times, oh my God, wow.
They found the entire family were under the patio.
That's crazy.
And so they were drugged and shot with a .22, but Xavier wasn't there. So they weren't sure if he was taken or if he was responsible or if...
Yeah, you have no idea.
No, but they found out that he had inherited a .22 after his father passed away and got a license the next week and apparently got a silencer. So he had all of the equipment to do such a thing. There was also like some weird note that was sent like, I forget who it was
sent to their house, right?
Yeah, that said something like, you know, that I'm in whatever it was, like the French FBI kind of thing, or that he was in the CIA, or, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't know. They said that they saw him like carrying a bag in a different area, and that he was like taking a trip, and they thought maybe he went off and committed suicide, but they never found his body or anything pointing them that way.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of theories that are like that he's still out there.
Yep. And I don't think they found anything like linking him to the murder specifically either.
Yeah.
They just like found the bodies, and like his body wasn't there. And then I guess, you know, all of this led to them thinking he's just gone.
Yeah.
Starting a new life, possibly.
Right. Again, that goes back hand in hand. Like we saw that. We just talked a whole half hour about a similar situation. You know, it could have just been like, well, you know, they said they were having some money troubles. But again, it's something so trivial that like,
yeah,
you can't get through it. You know, you just don't know. But since this was aired, that they have had people saying that they've had possible sightings of him. I mean, he has a very, like, I call it, like, normal face. He looks yeah. like he could just blend in, you know, anywhere.
Yep, absolutely.
Or be mistook for someone. But it would be nice to, if he is still around, get some closure. That's the hard part of watching these type of things, because there is no answer.
It's unsolved.
Right. There's just nothing, you know, concrete, but
yeah, just here's the story and hopefully we'll figure it out.
Right, by spreading the word. And that's another reason why they started this up again, was because now that Netflix is on this platform, you can go international and perhaps someone knows something or has seen this guy, or, you know, just has information. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, those, I mean, for me, at least those three stuck out, you know, the most. Also that the one that with the UFO, that one's worth checking out for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And Alonzo Brooks and Lena Chapman. If you're interested in these stories, I think it's worth checking out, you know, to learn more about these and see if, you know, there might be things that other people.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe you guys watching these episodes will trigger something and you might know something. Who knows?
And Unsolved Mysteries Part 2 returns today, October 19th, with 6 more mm-hmm. unsolved cases. So we'll have to check those out and summarize them here again.
Yeah.
Another unsolved mystery was recently covered by our friends Drewby and Yergi on their podcast, The Misery Machine. They are talking about a local crime that happened in Jay, Maine, back in the 80s. So if you are interested, we would hope that you take a listen to our bonus episode right after this one to hear Mystery Machine's episode and possibly help out in finding Kimberly Moreau and giving the family some closure. And now something to know.
Did you know? Glitter is so unique that it can be effectively used as forensic evidence. Because there are thousands of different types of commercial glitters, any glitter particles found on a suspect can be compelling evidence that they were at a crime scene where an identical glitter particle was found.
Wow, sparkly. And now you know.
So we've been loving all the true crime that's been showing up lately. Not literally, just the shows. And we hope you have been too. We'd love to know what your favorite true crimes are, so drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in. Feel free to share us with someone you know. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, thisthat_pod, and visit our website, thisthatpod.com.
You're Danielle. Oh, I'm Stephanie. Yep. You're Danielle.
That's right.
Hey, she's Danielle. Yeah. I'm Stephanie. Yes.
And remember, with friends, anything is possible.
Bye. This, That, and the Other Thing with Danielle Messina and Stephanie Rossi is recorded at Landbridge Records. Special thanks to Rigby for providing our theme song and incidentals. Be sure to check us out on Instagram and Twitter at thisthat_pod and our website, thisthatpod.com.